As required, we are advised to set out as profound and altruistic motive why we're here to listen to the teaching. So the highest form of motivation required on our part is, if one can, to think of for limitless sentient beings, how terribly kind they have been throughout our beginningless existence, and when they have been our parents, how they have cared for us, and therefore develop a sense of universal responsibility to do something for them. To this end, then one says to oneself, I will listen to the teaching as a starting point of my training and growth. So we listen to the teaching with that motive. If this is difficult for one, then one generates a second level of motivation, which is, I will listen to the teaching to get information about the practice from my own personal emancipation or freedom or nirvana. If that is somewhat difficult, then at the very least, one is required to think, to receive the teaching as a way of making this life meaningful for oneself in such a way that living a good life, a virtuous life, one sows the seed to come back as a human, only to continue with the practice where one might have left off. So, motive, the driving force, determines the amount of merit one gathers through any practice. For example, the merit one gathers based on the first motivation will last right unto the stage of Buddhahood. Although one may enjoy the fruit of the merit never runs out. And then when you reach the stage of Buddhahood, it's not that the merit runs out somewhat. It just lasts right unto and beyond the stage of Buddhahood. The merit one gathers based on the second motivation lasts up to one's attaining nirvana and beyond. And the merit one gathers based on the third motivation lasts maybe when you achieve good qualities in this life, or the merit will last up until the next lifetime when you come back. Because intention was to use the merit to come back as a human, and when you do come back, then the merit, the potency of merit, comes to an end. So, Kunlong, motive, the driving intention or the driving force really determines the outcome one achieves. And all that one may have managed to do is nothing more than say Om Mani Padme Hum. Depending on with what motive one said the mantra, one will achieve three different outcomes.
对呢，就我们通过这样的，养猪的这个人呢，养猪搞笑的这个我们的发财的人都是，哦，这我们通过讲的，包括讲的，包括讲的嘛，就嘛讲的，那我们通过讲的是，全部讲的可能，全部讲的包，包做出来，明，哦，整体吃起是肉，也是把你把吃成肉，当然吃起是。
Give an example, here, first you have a spoonful of milk or a spoonful of milk. If you throw the spoon in the middle of the ocean, then it becomes one with the expanse of the ocean. The milk will be part of the ocean, it will be there until the ocean is there or ocean runs out. If you mix the spoon of milk, let's say in a bucket of water, then it will be part of a bucket of the volume of the bucket of water and will be there until the bucket of water runs out. If you mix the spoon of milk in a small cup, and it will run out when the liquid in the cup runs out. So, there was slight mistranslation. So, if you mix a teaspoon of milk in a tablespoon of water, then the milk will last as long as the water in the tablespoon has. So, and how much milk in each container? That's it's a different issue. But so that's how the spoon of milk will become a part of different volumes of water in different spaces. So that was a rationale for having good motives and intentions. So let me now resume from where we left off yesterday. We finished talking about the six remembrances, if you can recall. And let me resume by saying, by citing a short quote, which says, Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha are refuge of those who seek liberation. And indeed, liberation of either personal liberation or universal liberation, whichever liberation you seek, you need all the available support system you can get, for at this stage of our development, we are not able to single-handedly, independently know the path and do the practice. So we need the support system and the support from wherever we can get of all available support. The support that can never let us down is the support of the three jewels, Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. Why did that of all available support The best is that which comes from the three jewels, the Buddha and Dhammasangha. Why? It is believed that they are ideal support. They will never let us down. We can invariably count on them because, one, they are themselves totally beyond all forms of vulnerability, material, spiritual, and so on. Number one, they have overcome and they're beyond, they've gone beyond all forms of vulnerable, painful, frightening situations. Secondly, they have complete know-how. They're extremely skilled and they have the best know-how to lend the support those who seek to reach the same state. Thirdly, they have equally to all, whether all have harmed them or all have benefited them, the three jewels, no distinction. They only know one thing, and that is to help, regardless of somebody massaging them on the left and, you know, then cutting them off on the, hacking them on the right. They do not know any distinctions. Yesterday when we were covering the six remembrances, the last three remembrances were remembrance of a giving, generosity, second, remembrance of ethics or moral restraint, conscious moral restraint, and third, remembrance of God or deities. So these three forms of remembrance talk about a cause and effect, nature of existence. So, if a question is asked, what do I gain, what do I get if I practice the last three remembrances, generosity, ethics, and deity, you will achieve true forms of deity. And that is, by learning to loosen the grip of mindfulness on things you own, and learning to share, and learning to let go of things, so that somebody else also benefits from what you have got, then you gain a body of merit. Learning to consciously be in control of your action and restraining from actions harmful immediately to the victim, ultimately to oneself, what do I achieve? These two are the causes. What do I achieve? What do I get? I get the third remembrance, the gods. I'll be among the gods. How? Speaking from sutra point of view, so when you learn to give, and when you learn to consciously, willingly restrain from harmful actions of body, spirit, and mind, you'll be among the gods, in the sense that you will be among the gods of the desire realm above humans, above the plan of humans, and you'll be among the gods of the form realm, which a plan of existence above the gods of the desire realm, where you will experience state of temporal well-being for an incredibly long time. Gods live far much longer than humans do. So from that point of view, you will achieve the gods, meaning you enjoy the fruit of giving and giving and ethics for much longer time, and intensity will be also stronger. Speaking from tantric point of view, what kind of God can I achieve through giving and conscious restraint from harmful deeds? You'll achieve the God of the deities, meditational, transcendent deities. So transcendent deities, as a result of giving, as a result of ethics, these will gradually have shed the layers, the outer veils of delusion and karmic obscurities. And when the mind begins to shed the outer shrouds of delusion and so on, the mind becomes clearer and purer and sublime, pristinely sublime, due to which you will begin to see the real transcendent enlightened deities, and you will become one of those deities yourself. So, mataka means impure or the solid. Impure or the solid can be in terms of motivation and gyu, means motivation and cause or material, let's say what it is. And gyu here refers to, Geshe-la says, impure karma. So let me touch briefly about impure motive. Impure motive can be explained with reference to Devdatta. Have you heard of Devdatta? Devdatta was Buddha's half brother or Buddha's brother. Buddha's relative, close relative, but he was a cynic. He was highly negative of Buddha. He never thought Buddha was a Buddha. Buddha was in fact a charlatan who was showing off being good, but in fact he thought to himself, whatever, Buddha was not perfect, Buddha was not virtuous, sublime, and whatever Buddha did out of goodness of compassion for others was misconstrued by Devdatta, as if he was planning to do something, to gain something from people. So Devdatta, Buddha's own brother, or half-brother, never saw an iota of goodness in the Buddha. The impure karma generally veils the mind, the otherwise pristine mind that is glowing from within, from seeing what is out there in its true nature. And that can be explained by way of, you know, Asanga. Have you heard of Asanga? And Maitreya Buddha? So, this master, Indian master Asanga, he needed to see Maitreya in person to ask profound questions about wisdom gone beyond, perception of wisdom gone beyond, scriptures for teachings of the Buddha. There was no one on earth who could explain. So he needed to see Maitreya Buddha. For that he meditated for 12 years. He meditated for the first 3 years, and then he came out disheartened. This repeated for the second 3 years, third 3 years, and at the end of fourth 3 years, he completely gave up. And then he came out, and he saw what was actually Maitreya, the Buddha he sought for 12 years in the form of a female dog barking ferociously, but infected with disease and being consumed by worms from the lower part. So Asanga, who did not see Maitreya Buddha for what he is, he only see Maitreya Buddha in the form of a dog. Obscured by karma, you don't see an entity or a person for what they are. So, this master was a bodhisattva, and therefore, by being a bodhisattva, when he saw this dog, who he didn't know was Maitreya, his heart went out for the dog, the condition in which it was. Because the dog was so ferocious and looked so angry, he felt sad for the anger the dog was having. He also felt extremely sad for the condition in which it was. And therefore, he wanted to help the dog. He wanted to help the dog in removing the maggots. And if he removed the maggots from the dog and placed it on the ground, he knew the maggots would die. And therefore, he also had to save the maggots. And having meditated for 12 years, there wasn't much flesh left on him. The only flesh that passed his body was the bottom, the rump stick. Anyway, so he thrust part of the bottom flesh of his body, and he wanted to transfer maggot from the dog onto the flesh. And but he knew that if he used his finger, the maggots might be harmed or something. So he wanted to transfer, lick the maggot from with his own tongue and transfer. And he closed his eyes and stuck his tongue out to lick the maggot. And as he went forward, he couldn't seem to reach out, touch. And the dog also stopped crying. And then he wondered what had happened there. And all of a sudden, when he opened his eyes, there was Maitreya standing before him. And then he said, he cried of indignation. How very cruel of you, as it were. I meditated for you 12 years. You never showed to me. Out of indignation, he expressed his frustration. So Maitreya said, I wasn't being uncompassionate. I was there on day one when you entered the cave. You didn't see me because you were veiled. Your inner eye was veiled by your bed, by thick layers of karma. In fact, as a proof that I was there on day one, when you came to the cave, somehow you spat. That's what people do sometimes in India. And they spat, and you spat on my robe, look. And he said, there's a mark still. So then Asanga said, why is it that now I managed to see you? And Asanga said to him, that's because you developed pure, selfless compassion and empathy for this dog, knowing that the dog was in great pain. Psychologically, it was in pain, for it was barking and creating, you saw the dog as creating karma, bad karma for future, and physically you saw the dog in such a, sad, desperate condition, and you wanted to save the dog and save the maggot. To this end, you were fearless in cutting, your own flesh. You didn't mind the pain of cutting your own flesh to save the dog, and you were utterly moved by genuine, spontaneous, profound compassion. That had an immediate effect on doing away with all the layers of karmic obscuration, and therefore, when these were gone, you saw me just now. So, Asanga said to Maitreya, okay, now I want to show you to the people. and I will carry you on my shoulders, on my back, and I want to take you to town and show you to town folks. And Meshach said, it will be pointless, for people won't see me, unless people have pure karma. Nevertheless, he said, if you really want, okay, that's what you want to do, you do it, you carry me and show it to the people, show me to the people. Then he thought he had Maitreya on his back. When he reached the town, said, people, people, come and see, I've got Maitreya, I've got Maitreya, do you see Maitreya on me? Of course, people had bad karma, didn't see, and people said to themselves, 12 years meditation, oh, he has finally gone off his mind. So these people didn't believe that he had Maitreya, but when he did have Maitreya on his back. So, the point of talking about the two impurities in terms of impurity of intent, impurity of karma, is that they really form a thick shroud of obscurity that prevents us from seeing the pure, the sublime, and so on. And so, by way of practicing remembrance of giving, generosity, and ethics, they have us gradually shed these impurities, and when these impurities are gone, then you see things all other people don't see or will not see. And you will see Buddha. If you want to see Buddha, you will see Buddha. If you want to see Bodhisattva, you will see Bodhisattva. If you want to see your personal transcendent meditational deity, you will see that. And you will have a direct access to them.
And Buddhagaya
says that Buddhagaya is like about the holiest place for the Buddhist world, or in the Buddhist world, and there's that stupa, which tapers to a fine point. So at the on the lower part of the stupa, the lower parts of the stupa are embossed with a relief of different deities, among which was the Tara. And when the ancient master Atisha went to Buddhagaya, he was circumambulating one of the Tara. Now he saw one of the reliefs of Tara as real Tara, who actually talked to him and gave him advice about his future and what he should do and shouldn't do and so on. But the relief is still today there in Buddhagaya. When we see, well, what do we see? We see, an embossed statue of Tara. Does she talk to us? No. Do we see her as a real Tara? No.
Other things, America,
So I was talking to you before saying that the last three remembrances of giving ethics become means or causes to achieve that the third remembrance, which is the effect in the form of God, can be mundane gods or transmundane gods.
That means
So having spelled out the six remembrances, in the next standard. Then Nagarjuna advises his friend, the king, would you like some cushion? Oh, you have? Okay. In the next stanza, he spells out how actually to practice karma.
Right. That is,
this stanza teaches how to practice the law of cause and effect or ethics. And since he was talking to a non-ordained Buddhist person, the king, so he wasn't talking ethics in terms of the ethics observed by the ordained. He was teaching, he talked about the ground ethics, the ground or the grassroots ethics applicable to all Buddhists. And the grassroots ethics is that of restraining from 10 negative actions of body, speech and mind. So when we fall down, we fall down on the ground. Okay, we fall from the ladder, we fall down on the ground. Or when we fall off the chair, we fall on the ground. So when we rise on our feet, we invariably depend on the ground on which we fell to get up. So we use the ground to put us back on our feet. In the same way, when we depend on the very things that with which we create causes of our suffering, and the causes, the avenues of causes of suffering are body, speech and mind, and these, the three are called the avenues of our actions. So since we perform actions only in three ways, either through body or speech or mind, and when we perform negative actions, we create causes of suffering. So we use the very three avenues or three agents, three media to undo what we have done. So if you perform negative actions in terms of body, what negative actions the body do we perform or commit? And what effects do we experience? On the other hand, when we consciously restrain from negative actions of the body, we engage in a practice called abandonment. So what do we achieve? What do we achieve through absence of creating negative actions of the body? Say in some sutras it says, three actions of body, four of speech and two of mind. When these are negative, these are called non-virtuous. And their opposite is not just mere abstinence, but proactively doing something the direct opposite of these, then these are called the ten virtues. So, what are the three actions when performed physically they become negative? So, these are negative or unwholesome. What are they? These are aggressing others. Or anyway, these are killing. They are number one is killing. Number two is stealing. Number three for lay people is sexual misconduct. And for the ordained is sexual activity. So these are three actions, three negative actions. So taking life or cutting short a life doesn't necessarily amount to taking a human life or cutting short a human life. From a Buddhist perspective, from Buddha's point of view, abstinence from taking life is to practice non-violence, and therefore it applies to taking any kind of life, even the life of insects on the blade of grass or on the trees and so on. So, some people say, oh, I haven't killed the bugs on the veggies. I've asked them to do it. And so they try to shift responsibility to somebody else, as if they are themselves not responsible. In fact, it's doubly bad. Not only in your bid to keep your hands clean, you have asked somebody else to spray, and then you make your vegetable beautiful and clean. In fact, you have involved somebody else to do killing. So killing means killing by oneself or having somebody killed on your behalf by the hitman. So stealing of course pertains to stealing, snatching, and jump means burglary. So with the sexual misconduct, it's a touchy kind of area, and even if one is lawfully wedded, however, if one sexually engages with one's partner in the presence, let's say, in the presence of the images of the Buddha and holy objects, that amounts to the action. And it also amounts to sexual misconduct if the action is carried out, especially when both of the partners or one of the partner is under one day ordination vow or Mahayana precepts and so on. So these are three actions when done physically, they impinge on others' happiness, others' life, others' resources, and resources, in, you know, and others' loved ones, and people having sense of attachment to love and resources and the partner, anyone who engages in this action really impinges on other people's happiness. Therefore, they are harmful. However, if one develops the, if one develops strength of character and consciously restrains from these, then one is engaged in their opposite virtues, and they will be called virtues of body, speech, the body. So, that four known virtues of speech, four actions of speech, when performed, they end up being non-virtuous or negative. So, speech-wise, the four non-virtues are telling lie, slandering, a harsh word, gossiping. I think some people say idle gossip. Telling lie can be very serious. Let's say if there is a lama, meaning a Buddhist teacher, today we call lama, and if this lama, in order to impress that he is special or she is special, says to their faithful, I can see deities in my dream. I can see this and that, give an air of holiness and being special. And then the listener at once thinks, oh, maybe he has these qualities, when in fact he or she or they do not have at all. Then it amounts to telling lie. And on the part of the ordained, such a kind of lie amounts to breaking their root vow. They cease to be monk or nun if they engage in telling such forms of lie. So this doesn't become white lies. It is a very serious lie, the biggest form of lie. People sitting on the floor, you will not have this kind of, you will not suffer from this kind of a lie. You will not engage in, people like me, in my position, are susceptible to this. So, don't you please come to me and say, do you think you have the understanding of this? Then don't put me in a vulnerable situation. It's acceptable. I might just come to that. And I might say, maybe I do. Don't make me tell lies. So, if you do that, then you'll be, you know, ruining your life and my life. Your life because you believe me, and you force me, and therefore I chose lie, and you know, it just doubly ruining it. So anyway, this is a serious issue, negative thing. So, slandering Geshe-la here means kind of a pretension, you know, to change somebody's view about you with a view to harming them with a view to cause some harm. For example, you go to someone and you shed tears. But in fact, you are really happy inside. So what do you call that in English? To see? Hypocrite? So anyway, yes, that is a hypocrite. That is a deceitful. So, pick the harsh word. Harsh word means any incisive word. Which may be factual, or which may not be factual. You know, to call someone's name, because the person suffers from impairment. So let's say you're blind. I mean, the person is blind, and to call the blind, blind in a spiteful way, it's a factual, but it really hurts the feeling of the blind, or by a non-factual harsh word. Suppose there's a crippled person who you don't like, and then who gets on your nerve all the time, they say, you cripple, or you might say, you bloody cripple kind of thing, and make it worse. I mean, it's true the person is crippled. Why rub salt in the wound? And here, the kind of harsh word spelled out here could subsume all name callings. Kizan pazi keşek mar var. Amerika tan Rusya kol keşek mar var. Çeren ne diyor? Çeren
ne
So, Rachel means, you know, just as action speaks louder than words. The one he performed, and which is, it also requires some degree of a mild degree of a menace, of wanting to harm somebody. And you go to that children to what do you call that? Snickering. What snicker? What does snicker mean?
Yes,
is it that?
Yes.
He's laughing at him. He's saying, and to do that. But if one did that with a view to, with a hope and a view to changing the behavior for the better, the same action may not be gossiping here. Normally, okay, anyway, that's what Krishna says. So these are four unwholesome speech and negative speech actions. So remember, you may know all these, but I'm here going through the text in which Nagarjuna was talking to the king, and he says, "O king, you could commit three negative actions through mind." So these are nothing means covetousness, and nothing means really just evil intention or malice, and then lokta means nihilistic views. So covetousness and malice are easy, aren't they, that we to talk about? We know them. You know them, don't you? How could we? So by the way, what is nafs and covetousness?
You want something that belongs to somebody else. You really covet,
you
look at it, wish that you could
have it. You could have it. Shena yubi kalachin rava, ngana juna sami chi gabachini, shenbachini suyo, ngana tomna sami chi rava, hila nafsin si gore. Do you all agree with that? Do you all agree with that?
Not just what other people have, but even things for sale, really, isn't it?
Things you have yourself.
No, things for sale, it's just desire and generosity.
Yes, yeah.
And it can take.
Oh, I see, yeah. Now, shall you even my dear? In the things that are things for sale, did you say?
Yeah,
in the shop.
And
display room, okay. I get them as mission that you might have been a song on the Tala Mutam Shah, song your what? 50% discount. This way, 50%. Oh, Tala Yahoo, you must come to some of your what? Here, nothing to do with the song. No. So that is the desire for you wanting desire, it's not covetousness. 제가 not them to shake it back to soon no but you that belongs to somebody else shake it shake it
down
to soon not them to shake it tom all the boat to come back
then could surely go with it there and kill away this shit in a not to go in there will kill the kid shit on the temple of
the
road did not say it to you
괜찮다 말하고 계시다.
그건
무슨 상관인 거지? 네네. 키디
씨는 빼앗으시는
상관인 거지? 나한테는 되게. So, Geshe-la says, 그 키니에로와? 키디 씨는 내가 가오시미 씨는 나한테는 적어요. So, to give an example, Geshe-la gives an example to show what a naktam is. Suppose someone has their pet dog. Chihuahua, is it? Their pet dog. Or you don't like the person. You don't like the person. Then you say, I wish this Chihuahua would die. Would be eaten by another bigger dog. I would be. How nice would that be? That, he says, is covetousness. So somebody, you know, you normally say, oh, okay, Lothan is really upset, a mean person, because he, I've been seen by others wishing the death of a country's Chihuahua. So, when there are two people arguing about something, and one of the person you don't like, and the other person really gives a good verbal beating of the person you don't like, you have a certain right. Of course, the Geshe-la is a kind of a covetousness. So, the example you were giving me before, you know, seeing sales items, and then to dialing, that would be just pure desire. Okay, now, what's the second thing? Nisim is a malice. Harmful intent. Nis means the harm. Sim means the mind. The mind that wants to harm. And it has been translated as harmful intent or malice. What is it then?
Lothan
wants to kill the Chihuahua. And Lothan, Chihuahua, that's correct, thank you. Pardon? Putting a curve.
Yeah,
and the shell took out the momicary or Michelle doesn't matter, my particular momicary or curse. Cursing is a speech thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
not a mental thing, is it?
Yes, that motive
comes from the mind. Yes, that motive. Okay, so it looks like he agrees with that. So what is lokta? Lok means wrong view. Lok means wrong stance, wrong view, wrong perspective, or nihilistic. Okay, anyway, it says wrong view. So what do you understand by wrong view? Could you define or give examples of wrong view? You got sacked.
So, look at your mental thoughts, half over the set.
Sick. Sad. Sacked is the job.
Yes.
Not understanding. So that was
not believing that. That's not this how the conventional world exists. The tapestry of
the land and the chief measure of the lot of it.
Not
your name is Anne, isn't it? He has a tinge of a wrong view because he has misgivings about past and future life. If some good things, I wonder if there's something like past and future life. That is called deluded doubt. Yes, deluded doubt. But lockdown means a conviction. There can't be past life. There can't be future life. That's it. This is it. I'll follow my nose. So, defining lokta from Buddhist perspective, distorted view or perverse, some even say perverse view, or let's say distorted view, wrong view, from Buddhist perspective is total disbelief in a disbelief in three jewels, in Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha. Just believe in karma, that if you do negative, you will have an unpleasant consequences. Total disbelief. Or disbelief that, disbelief about death and impermanence. As well as disbelieving that there are hells, hungry ghosts, and things like celestial realms. That also is a lokka, just a wrong view. So these are distorted views, wrong views, because one chooses to disbelieve in something such as three jewels and karma, whose existence, whose operation, like law of cause and effect, has been proved by logic and experience. And to say that something like that, which is logically proved, experientially valid, to say doesn't exist, it's a distorted view. So, when somebody knows the downside of these 10 unwholesome actions, and then makes a conscious decision and choice, informed choice, I will not do these things, and takes a moral stance, that, and then these become 10 virtues, or practice of 10 virtues. These are nikewa, negative. Negative in the sense, they are doubly harmful. Not only do they harm one, they harm others. Or other way around, not only do they harm others immediately, but also one in the long term or immediately. So, anything that is mutually or doubly harmful is called nikewa. Nikewa, non-virtues, or harm. Is a better word for that, Kantra? On top of avoiding or consciously restraining from 10 known or 10 unwholesome actions, Nagarjuna advises his friend King reckless behavior. Reckless behavior. And Nagarjuna advises the king to avoid abuse of substance, meaning alcohol, and of course those that maybe opium, I don't know, and things that alter one's state of consciousness and then delude one into thinking that what is one actually that one is doing, so that one is doing right, when in fact one is in a state of delirium or an altered state. So he says, avoid things that make your behavior non-judicious, or that can make your mind, your behavior reckless. So he says, Dui Chang, the Jue Chang, berry, or Dui Chang means granule alcohol, meaning alcohol made from a grain. Jue Chang means, Jue Chang is a color. And fermented, artificially fermented alcohol, and so on, are barnive, net means are sources of recklessness. Sources of recklessness, O King, you should avoid these at all times. Likewise, or in the same vein, O King, you should live an honest way of life. What you eat, what you use, must not come at the cost of pain to others. Whatever you use, whatever you eat, must not cause pain to others. So, for, as a king, he, Nagarjuna says, if he said, I will only have a momo, in the moment of Tibetan delicacy, for example, I will only have a momo, nothing else, then that becomes a wrong means of livelihood, because you are issuing a royal kind of a degree or order whereby people are forced to serve you with that particular dish. Or if you say, I only have blackberry juice, nothing, no other juices, only blackberry, then if you are served blackberry juice or apple juice, whatever juice the king has come up with and he wants to drink, that also forces people to serve you that which may be hard to come by or whatever. It becomes, because there's some kind of a coercion is involved, therefore it's wrong, and therefore wrong means of livelihood, which the king has been advised against. So, what is the right way of behavior, culinary behavior is to eat what is given, to eat, to drink what is given, rather than being so selective about and not being and being dissatisfied. Something that people have prepared, you know, so well, so that you might be pleased, and then say, I don't want that, I only eat these. And if you make such preferences so strongly known, and if you do get whereby people have to change things and painfully prepare something, then what you have enjoyed chastity will become a wrong means of livelihood. So we need to thankfully, gratefully receive what is given. So, wrong means of livelihood doesn't confine just to food and privileges. It applies to everything really. Suppose you go to a person to remember that the pair of socks you gave to me last winter? Paji, they were so comfortable, useful. And if it is stated, with insinuation or implication, would be very nice to have another one this winter, then that is, if you acquire, and if you make somebody give you, then that's also a wrong means of livelihood.
Okay,
I'll now leave the time for you for questions. It is killing. It is taking. Taking life. So it is taking life because taking any life is taking life. But when you kill a big animal, it's taking life. When you kill a small animal, they're taking life. But how do you overcome what?
How do we overcome that
bad karma?
Because we have to get it.
That's a great question. So I gave this example. When you fall on the ground, you use the ground to help you get up. And the same way, if you perform a negative action or of taking lives, then you can undo the negative action by supporting life. How? By buying the life of animals and things. Let's say, for example, fish, which have been caught. And you say, could I please buy those fish and owl? And you throw them back into the ocean. So that directly counteracts that life you cut short of some other thing, other beings.
We call it. Find the first and let go.
Yes. But
let go, you come to karma,
and get them pending here and they take up booming get a bootstrapper near any Jew kicking you in a trap, Jew in unit, Jew and the Jew. Cut a tongue, so let's roll level and banning Yan Yuner, natural liberty. He and Jew, come up daggery, chick daggery, country daggery, so.
Yeah, that's
in
another church, we should not cheat on that.
Because this table is very dusty, you know, really covered with dust. If you want one, how much dust will it wipe off? Maybe they will ask what about sword or clean shiny table. That other part of the dust, the other part of the table top will still be covered with dust. And if you do the second, another part is gone. If you do the third, see it remains, a lot remains. And in the same way when you polish, yes, it looks cleaner, it looks shinier. The more you do, the shiny it becomes. In the same way, suppose you have sprayed and killed bottles, and how much you don't know. So, if you buy life, for example, of a few birds, so that would have addressed a fraction of bottles killed. And if you bought, let's say a bucket full of fish, or then you release them, it will help address certain parts. So you need to be aware the degree or the amount of previous negativity you collected or you committed, and then accordingly, the more you do virtuous things, the more non-virtuous things are directly counteracted and challenged, and then got rid of. Here it's good to recall how the usefulness of addressing the past karma. And there's one quote which says, the bad karma of the learned, even if they are powerful, becomes light. The bad karma of the unlearned, even if it is small to start with, will grow exponentially big and powerful.
A pair of battery guards were released, and it was right in the middle of winter. These battery guards have been obviously bred in aviaries in warm circumstances. They were let out and it was snowing. And I would suggest that they would have very little chance of living. Well, how does karma relate in that circumstance to the people who obviously bought the birds, with the feeling that they were going to release them, make them free, and yet, in doing so, they're probably killing them?
Five Puja?
Yeah, five Puja.
Okay. Jinsi, right? Yeah. I capture and Jinsi. Jinsi, 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 J 바츠브리 바데 주춘준여라 바치카트라 주춘준다 예 바타 니나 바서데 주사도 지원아 주리데 아니 벤조 아 진세 아 참조 아니 주케요 주도도 바 아 르르 당송 들어 르 당저상 남시 당무 시민나 바 남긴 민 나로 샤고 알아다 진세 가라 진짜
So,
on the part of the person who relieves the best regard, is it?
Yes.
The bird. Okay. And the anyway, on the part of the person who released the bird, who released the bird with a view to freeing the bird, you know, giving freedom back to the bird, and there is no negative action of killing the bird. Even if the birds were to die in cold, harsh, cold climate. But the person simply released the bird with the intention of freeing the bird. So, and if the bird may die, may be killed by a hawk or killed by fire or killed by snow, then it died under different circumstances. So it doesn't entail any negativity on the part of the person who had the goodness of heart to let it go free. However, if the person did release the bird in the knowledge that, I have to release this bird, although I know it's going to die, then it would become a negative thing.
What about the observer?
Yeah.
Observer?
Me?
Yeah.
Would you have any negative?
I'm unable to do anything about it.
That meet Jinsi Lugan Jaro, Jinsi Choyoti, Jude Kayong, Jude Le Tang, Mara Samba, at the same time, Nam Shi Tang with Dinner, Jude and Tayshan, Jewish Shield Samsung, whatever. Any horror of the Kashin of Sumach and horror around them, most people in Omari, Kukurung from somewhere of us. When a man is observant, Jesus is that there. You wouldn't get any negative thing for the observer. Why, Kishila? Why? You are not in a position to get involved in this activity. If you had any say, and you were able to do, then you could have done. But your involvement, your would have been culturally insensitive, and therefore the pattern was to keep away from it. And you are not. It would have been a most would have been inappropriate to get involved for reasons of imposing, for reasons of being intrusive and culturally insensitive, and you want to let them do what they want to do. And therefore, you are not in a position to get involved. You don't have the prerogative, you don't have the entitlement, legally or otherwise. So, Kishila says, you would not, the observer like yourself, would not be held responsible in terms of getting negative karma. So, of generosity, again, there are four kinds. One is called generosity of giving life, or generosity of giving fearlessness, generosity of giving refuge and fearlessness. Have you heard of this? What is it? What would constitute? What act would constitute? No. Anyway, there are different kinds of generosity. And one is called giving fearlessness and refuge. Giving fearlessness of refuge. Or fearlessness in refuge. So, there are three kinds of generosity. Material generosity, generosity of teaching, giving teaching, generosity of giving security or fearlessness or refuge. What act would constitute that generosity is the question.
Giving some protection to some being in unrestricted.
Peter. Anybody else? The answers are getting better and better.
I could maybe say that giving fearlessness is, say, rescuing an animal that is being treated badly,
mm-hmm.
and you take it and you feed it and you cleanse it and
mm-hmm.
make it safe and then find a good home for it.
And then the same thing, maybe give it to the best and that's how you the same thing. Find a safe home, Nang Yabuchik, Adolching, and Nang Natural, that you grown heaven, DM Michel Captain Chakmur Santosa. He said, you sent it. Yes. Right. As I said before, this is Yaka. That means it's getting better and better. And his accent, his Tibet accent, is getting better and better. I better go home because you're getting better and better. Before I lose ground, the flock, I better head home in a dead spirit of down deep south. No. What if you give your hand to somebody who, in doing gardening, shifting house, take a garden,
내도 당해라 컴바 당해라 로바치
산다 로바치 내가 컴바 다니나 컴바 와산 로바치 내가 와치 바로치
이제 많이 말아 그래
아
그걸 로바치 말아 이제 로레 말아 이제 맞아 말아 맞네 제오
제수 나와 때 때라
예 되지게 안 하면 또 What do other people think? They are just discussing. If you have somebody build their house, do their gardening, and give them hand when they're shifting house, for such a very stressful time, so would it be generosity? Geshe-la thought it wasn't, it was just a help. So, since the and some to say, of course it's generosity, you're giving it time.
And you also start to check in with speech and Greek language. So there's moving sound. When you help them, may not.
So it's a generosity, do you think?
So there's something, it's pretty important teaching where they're just there to do hands, so it'd be really genuine thing to help that person who really probably needs it. I just wish the English
Yes. Sugitan is some good Jabjurava. Everyone at the Chimbore Tango to Utrava, a major social to the Tugore, and if you social to the Tavage, quite like the young Tugore, like a young person who could stress. That is one of Jora, Jarat Tabaj, Tim, Chibo, the new Tangaji, what the social order. And I think it's a woman of colors.
Fearlessness
actually would be that you're not frightened of getting
stressed out. So that's just like saying an employer, an employee, mm-hmm. and then they give them money.
Mm-hmm.
But they're being generous. And give them
money, you mean salary?
Yeah, that's like saying they're being generous. Whereas isn't the basic human element of just helping each other? And then generosity is that next level of putting yourself out that little bit more in doing something beyond your normal everyday human element of just being there for people. Isn't that sort of, the generosity is a slightly different level to just...
Dando Konyi Mishaya De Ani Pachi Chimiya Chana Pachi Generosity Chimba Ayin Sangu Tu Utsa Dan Tien Tien Dei Ani Mijo Dumbra Lagi Taiva Ta Kangbu Poro Chiva Generosity Chimba Yinba Yina Atrava Ani Chiga Chintaba Ta Yohol Laji Dei Gawarwa Dei Ani Chimba Chagarwa Kashi Dei Gawarwa Kru Ani Chiga Stress Ning Tang Gawarwa Kru Chula Chingin Dei Gawarwa Nge Sama Generosity Chana Kitang mi mi chuson la chik chula tinde ta chik interaction ton of Java Johnson Kevin jitu Kevin ten ni yawaris jana jimbos ni dila tinti chik Java chik jana mara tango tu usa So this is really healthy debate and this is what called debate of the Dharma you know you issue Rather, you thrash out the issues like that. Geshe-la says it's called debate.
Doesn't generosity come at different levels? Like Asanya was giving some of his flesh to the maidens. Doesn't that generosity come at different levels? And one of the highest levels is actually giving your own life.
Mm-hmm.
Or, donating your organs or something
mm-hmm.
like that. So your fearlessness is such that you have no fear for your own life at all. No attachment to your life
where
you give it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Pass robot, Tumna Pora Java, the Kamba Pora Java, the Tama, I see it in mind. Chimpa, the Mune, see the Chigi Rangila Matawa, Rangi Tawala Matawa, Rangi Tawala Matawa, Shem Kanasam, Lagachil, Anichigi, Ben Asanga, Tommy, and Koran Kusha Chani, Anichigi, Kimutan, бүснийгээ сууж тавиад ранг чатян ранг дүнэл мэтав энэ төстэй байтлаа үнэ сошиал соо зэрэг ранг соол мэтав шинг дэвал тань тэр анжиг сутар газар шин шинжин уан кона соонэ энэ тэндэй чинь чимбар бүрэл сан гэж үгүй сарва yes, indeed. I think it's generosity. I think it's giving of its own flesh, and then giving the love back to the maggot and to the anyway to save everyone concerned was or
the
so it is truly it is truly generosity of giving kind of us what did I say before giving fearlessness and it is also called generosity of patience. In you know the six perfections, generosity, ethics, patience, enthusiasm, perseverance, concentration, and wisdom, and each of the six perfections are practiced in each. So generosity of the generosity, ethics of generosity, patience of generosity, and so on, and the wisdom of the wisdom, patience of the patience, so on. Each is practiced completely within each. All the six, rather, are practiced within each. And Asanga's case would constitute a kind of generosity called generosity of patience as well. So I will now stop here. Thank you for coming and thank you for lively discussion and the questions. Thank you. And I'm particularly thankful for the Tibetan families here and all have come together or support each other or support to bring Dharma to Christchurch so that they believe that they have something to give to humanity at large and particularly humanity of Christchurch, because generosity begins at home, as it were. So they want to do something, give back. On their part, they are all, as I talk to them, they are highly knowledgeable. They don't need Buddhist teaching from me, for example. But they are coming together. They are helping each other. Just giving generosity. They are helping each other. And coming together, I really appreciate the cohesive harmony that prevails in the Tibetan community here for the greater good of, you know, teaching of the Buddha in Christchurch. So your presence, your attentions make their efforts meaningful, purposeful, and it's a numbers game, as you know. If you do something, if the customers don't come, then it flops, whether it's a school or anything. So your attendance, while it is for your own spiritual good and so on, it also makes them feel good that they can see some good received or good enjoyed and good had by the wider community. So I hope we meet again and so that numbers gradually grow, I hope. So right at the back, we will recite the prayer of dedication.